Hey, Brett here. You know, there is nothing more transferable to every profession, situation, walk of life, whatever, than skills pertaining to people, communication, and power dynamics. I mean, that's just the reality. Being more socially agile is only going to get more important in the future. AI and anything else is not going to make people irrelevant. What it is going to do is highlight the differentiation between those who have really locked in their people skills, their social agility, their ability to listen well, relate well, communicate, persuade, all those things, and those who are really only reliant on technical skills related to their trade. Research makes it clear. Those who are able to be more effective communicators across various contexts not only earn more, but have higher life and relationship satisfaction. And we'd love to be able to provide a way for you to check your blind spots, which we all have, by the way, myself included, or just be a part of your overall professional or continuing development. So please go to artofcoaching.com, check out our one-to-one mentoring, our live workshops, online courses, group mentoring, digital community, whatever. We have something for every single budget. We have something for every single walk of life. We have served folks from over 30 professions, and we would love the opportunity to serve you. Let us earn your trust. Let us help you get the results you deserve. Go to artofcoaching.com now.
Check it out. Check it.
Welcome to the Art of Coaching podcast. I'm Brett Bartholomew, and at a young age, poor communication nearly cost me my life. Now, I help others navigate the gray area of social interaction, power dynamics, and communication so they can become more adaptable leaders regardless of their profession, age, or situation. This podcast is for everybody who is fascinated with solving people problems. So if you're the no-nonsense type who appreciates frank conversations, advice you can put to use immediately, and learning how others navigate the messy realities of leadership, you're in the right place. I'm glad that you're joining us. Let's dive in. Today, I'm sitting down with Andrew Coates. Now, Andrew is a coach, writer, and a speaker, and he is renowned for his exceptional ability to absorb, organize, and really apply vast amounts of information across diverse subjects. That's one thing that always made him stand out to me. His intellectual curiosity is boundless. And so I thought, hey, we all have to deal with reams of new information coming at us daily. And it can get really messy in terms of learning how to identify what's really useful, what's useless. How do I make sense of this in my own messy head? So I want to have a conversation about that. We delved into how he navigates that relentless influx of information, how he does it without succumbing to overwhelm. So you're going to discover some strategies, literally nothing scripted, straight to the point of how to enhance your own learning and productivity, how you're going to be able to deal with the fact that, listen, no matter what part of life you're in, more and more information is going to continue to come at us. And you've got to find a system that works for you. So Andrew's going to talk a bit about his background, everything he's done from a writing standpoint, everything he's done from a coaching standpoint, very practical. And then we're going to get into really analyzing his mind. I know you're going to love this. He's very transparent. He's very personable. And maybe you'll see yourself in him as well. So without further ado, let's lock and load. Here is Andrew Coates. Welcome back to another episode of The Art of Coaching. I'm here with Andrew Coates. Andrew, been a minute.
Yeah, it's always great to see you at live events and interact. And it's a little bit, I'd say, surreal, you know, being on your podcast. I mean, I've listened to The Art of Coaching before. And you're also someone who, you know, I've been consuming your media for a long time, long before I met you.
Appreciate that.
People watching the video, I've got actually assigned by you copy of Conscious Coaching, which, you know, it's a great book. I love it. I can't wait for your next one to come out. So it's an honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
No, likewise. And, you know, it's a no-brainer to have you on, especially in light of some of the context that I'm going to lay out. So we just got done at the time of this recording running our speaker school workshop. And in the past 6 weeks, we've ran about 9 or 12 either events or workshops. And within those things, obviously a lot of information is shared back and forth. Right? Whenever you go to any kind of professional development, no matter the format, we all kind of get hit with a deluge of information. And you are somebody that I've always looked at. You take professional development far more serious than most in the sense that you don't just show up and kind of check a box. You synthesize information. You write about a lot of that information. I would say that you're pretty prolific in terms of just downloading, assimilating, and then writing, whether it's either social media or on blogs or on other mediums that you have. And so I thought, you know what would be interesting is we've done episodes on how to maximize your learning. We've done episodes on those filters, but having somebody else here that just your brain works so fast, you take in so much, and hearing how you do it. Our audience is always interested in other people's processes, whether it's creative, whether it's learning. So I'd love to know, just at the core question here, what has made you just so fervent about your desire to go anywhere and everywhere and learn? And then how do you manage the intake of all this information? And I'm giving you a broad canvas to paint here at the beginning.
So actually, there's a lot of different dimensions to this. So I enjoy the process of learning. I enjoy reading books. I don't watch much TV anymore. I'm a huge fan of the Witcher video, Witcher figures behind me. Yet I quit halfway through the third season because I thought the producers made a mess of it, despite how great Henry Cavill is. I love the video games, and I will actually relax and play Witcher 3 as a video game sometime, right? But most of the time, I'm just not interested in TV anymore. I grew up on television, and I'm much more interested in sitting down and reading. Maybe it's a fiction book or one of the books that I just picked up, and I read most of it on the flights to and from Orlando. I just came back from the Olympia giving a talk. It's this brand new book called The Anthology of Balaji by Eric Jorgensen. He did a book, The Almanac of Naval Ravikant. So it was so good, I figured this would be great. I love this. This is really interesting stuff. And to me, that's actually pretty relaxing. So when it comes to books are one of my favorite things. I do a lot of audiobooks, so I'll go through about 80 books a year, which sounds really ridiculous. I listen on high speed, but the goal is not to try to memorize and absorb every piece of this. What I'm looking for when I'm consuming any form of media is I'm looking for attitudes, philosophies, things that inspire me, and to go through a broad cross-section of resources so that way I actually know where those resources are when I need to go back and reference them. And occasionally you'll hear someone who'll say, audiobooks aren't as effective as physical books. Maybe comparatively, but guess what? What do? If I really enjoy the audiobook, I usually buy a physical copy and I reread it, right? It's a simple way. You may have in your life time to do 10 to 12 physical books a year for the more aggressive readers, given you have a young family. There's not necessarily a lot of time for that. And for me, I would rather actually spend my free reading time going through a course. Like I'm currently doing Prescript Level 1, Muscle Doc Jordan Shallow's thing. It's a great anatomy biomechanics course.
Okay. Now, just to orient the audience, because not everybody here is kind of in that realm, right? Can you give a little insight into so it sounds like your primary interest right now, if I'm hearing you, is still fitness and kind of that area, which that's what you're known for. You're known in that space, but or is this not the case?
Not necessarily. So again, I'm kind of dancing all over. This is how my brain works, right? It's everywhere.
Which is why we're trying to kind of get to the process of, for somebody that's brain works like you, how do you filter these things down?
So the book I mentioned, The Anthology of Balaji, this guy's, a tech guy, and he's talking about the future of humanity and technology. And he's sort of a futurist, and he's very positive about technology. We get a lot of this fear-mongering and negativity about the scare of technology, but what have we seen? Yes, we've seen certain industries die out because of advances of technology through the past. But what we don't always see, we see the dystopian portrayals from movies like The Terminator, right? Skynet. Cool. All right. There's a lot of AI talk right now. And it's not that AI is necessarily an interest of mine, but I'm open to exposing myself to ideas outside of the fitness industry, just as anybody in any industry should probably be looking elsewhere, as opposed to just consuming all the same information as everybody else in your field. So I try to reserve the time to advance my fitness skills, with that limited amount of time I have to maybe sit down and read a course textbook. So that's the prescript thing. Or Molly Galbraith sent me her Girls Gone Strong menopause certification. So I've been trying to pick my way through that. There's no audio version of that, so I can't do it that way. So then I'll go and do some Seth Godin on marketing or Jeb Blunt's sales stuff.
What field is he in? Sorry, just to orient the listeners again.
Jeb Blunt. So he would be, I'm not even sure what field he's in. He's just a sales guy. He's a sales mentor. And Seth Godin, again, just a big marketing guru. Or, you know, there are so many different other things. Ryan Holiday stuff, which is really just modern day Stoic philosophy, right? And pull from these pieces and these interests. One of my main approaches to any previous careers in this career is something that Seth Godin talks about in his book, Lynchpin, which is really similar to Cal Newport's Be So Good They Can't Ignore You. And it's just go above and beyond what you think you're being paid, the value you're being paid for. Because if you're that employee in any walk of life who decides, well, I'm paid this, so I'm only going to make this amount of effort. You don't stand out. You don't go above and beyond. You don't develop skills. You don't get noticed. You don't get noticed from within to get promoted, but you also get noticed by other people you interact with who may come along and go, you know, you're being underutilized here. Come work for me.
Heads up, our only speaker school of the year is coming up on June 1st and June 2nd in Phoenix, Arizona. This is such a unique event. We keep it under 10 people. You get a chance to have a lot of reps and you get a lot of feedback in a judgment-free zone. We mix in a lot of fun. We'd go through everything on slide design, how to present more effectively, how to be more articulate. And it really doesn't matter whether you're trying to actually build a speaking career, continue to scale the one you have, or if you just want to get more confident speaking in front of crowds. We've had people that have came that have done TED Talks. We've had people that come that have social anxiety. It is a very welcoming atmosphere. So if you enjoy and appreciate the opportunity to grow and improve and connect with other like-minded people, and you want a chance to become more articulate, to become more fluent, to improve how you get your message across, do not miss Speaker School. Also, it is a perfect time of year to come to Phoenix. It is always right before it gets way too hot in the summer. You can make a little vacation out of it. You can go hiking. You can go to Sedona. You can go to Scottsdale. There's so much to do. So go to artofcoaching.com/speaker now. That's artofcoaching.com/speaker. Remember, this is our only one of the year. Early bird pricing is still available. We hope to see you there.
Go above and beyond what you think you're being paid, the value you're being paid for. Because if you're that employee in any walk of life who decides, well, I'm paid this, so I'm only going to make this amount of effort. You don't stand out. You don't go above and beyond. You don't develop skills. You don't get noticed. You don't get noticed from within to get promoted, but you also get noticed by other people you interact with who may come along and go, you know, you're being underutilized here. Come work for me. And it's just this philosophy about going above and beyond. And I just fell in love with the process of actually learning and absorbing things. So to kind of bring it all back, I like broad exposure to different ideas. And then when I find things that I think are more valuable, A, I'm able to go deep and more aggressively on those topics. And two, you also get known as being someone who's a great resource for knowing these things. So you can add value to your friends. I sent our friend Luca Hosovar a copy of that book, The Anthology of Balaji, because I loved it so much. I said, Luca, you're going to love this. And so I just popped a copy in the mail to him. He'll appreciate that.
Okay, so to consolidate, right? And this is kind of, I think this is the fun of ad hoc interviews like this, because this was a question we got recently, is when we're dealing with people, and many times it's ourselves, where we're multi-passionate, which I certainly say that you are, given that answer and everything I've interacted with you in the past. We're multi-passionate. We want to learn. What are the main principles, however, that guide, that kind of bring you in and focus and say, okay, there's all these different books I want to read. There's all these different seminars I want to go to. For some, it's what's the need for the now? What's my biggest need? However, a lot of people really struggle with that because they're really good at convincing themselves that they have a need that in actuality is a want. So just to bring this back in, how do you decide and prioritize this is what I'm going to learn and commit to right now, whether now is this year, this month, because there's finite resources with our time, money, and attention. So what are those core principles that you use to kind of silence the noise and focus in on what matters for you?
I don't know if I've ever thought about it in terms of like core principles that I could define, but you said part of it right there. It's like, what do you need? So I think it boils down to two dimensions. There's things that are of interest where you have the ability to absorb broadly. And there are the specific things that, okay, I need this specific skill now, as you alluded to. So one of the things that I want to play around with a bit more is YouTube. I've got a couple of books that I've done in the past, and now they're right in the queue because there's going to be an effort to grow YouTube next year. So those things come right away. They're up next. And it is identifying. And I think it's just sitting down and having a clear set of goals, clarity on the things that you're working on. And then the discipline to not go and do, again, this is going to be a trainer reference, but how many coaches go and do yet one more, you know, seminar on physical training skills when they're already really good at that because they're playing within their comfort zone instead of going to learn how to public speak? I hosted an event recently here in Edmonton. And during my talk, because I get a lot of inquiries, people interested in coming up and they wanted to be speakers at my event. Now, I brought in a lot of big names like Luca, like Don Saladino.
Now, is this a fitness only event? Was this a broader event? What was the nature of it?
Well, it was to serve fitness professionals, okay, you know, and like healthcare professionals, but it was a fitness and business event.
Okay.
So I get up and I ask, who here would love to stand on a stage like this one day? And 80% of the hands went up out of a room of 120. But how many people will go and do a course in public speaking? How many people will go to Toastmasters or, you know, go do an improv class or take your, you know, your courses? No, they're going to go and learn another thing to learn how to do a Romanian deadlift well, or they'll go do another nutrition certification because it's the familiar, it's the safe thing. So it becomes saying, all right, these are the skills I need. This is what I'm not good at. I actually am going to go get really uncomfortable and suck at this for a little while and practice it. And that's the lens that I try to look at it through.
Yeah, that's helpful. I mean, I think, you know, this was a core reason for us really pivoting away from anything fitness, strength and conditioning, and opening all of our work to a wide variety of professions, because we actually found other professions will do those things often. I mean, every profession still has their own kind of curse of the technician. But I'll never forget when we started promoting more of our stuff and I really transitioned out of fitness and strength and conditioning. It was like, oh, wow, there are a lot of people that want to learn these things because the stakes are a little bit different. A lot of the fields are a little bit more mature kind of in their development. They know what a lack of communication or problem solving or improvisation skills cost them. And there's not really that signaling of like, oh, you've got to do this and do that. So, of course, I think that's going to balance. With you, I wondered this, because again, extremely multi-passionate, your brain moves so fast. Anybody listening can hear it right now. What is one of your approaches to even managing your time when juggling all these things? I mean, I'm hearing you say you run events. I'd love to know how much time you spend writing a week. And nobody's ever going to have balance. Nobody's ever going to have that. But what are things that you do, no matter how quirky they are or no matter how kind of just basic vanilla they are, how can somebody multi-passionate whose brain has a million things they're interested in better manage their time?
You have to schedule it. I mean, it's overly simplistic. And another skill is, especially in my world being fitness, if I have a client cancel on me, because I work in person full time, I still do that. I have online businesses as well. It's okay. Instead of the client canceled 2 hours notice and you have a free hour, it's like, if this, then this. And it's like, okay, I'm going to go and sit down and write for an hour if my client doesn't show up. So that way you're actually using your time effectively. We're not perfect at this. No one is, but you know, I'm trying to be more disciplined. I also, here's another misconception, because when you're doing a lot of different things, like for example, I was getting a talk ready for an Olympia event. I had my own event 3 weeks ago. Guess what? My writing volume went to zero in that frame of time because my time was allocated elsewhere. So you have to triage. You have to look at, all right, what are my immediate priorities? And I can't do it all. Now, for someone who writing is a mainstay of what they do, am I suggesting that you stop writing for a protracted period of time? No, I don't think so. I also stopped recording my podcast, which I've been doing regularly for 6 years. I'll get back at it soon. But I had to make some tough decisions. I'd also been feeling a bit burnt out. I've been accumulating some physical injuries, so I was a little bit worn down. And so I actually did a few less workouts recently because, okay, I need to give my body a little bit of a break. It's also telling me I was taking on too much. So instead of trying to get a little bit of writing in and distracted and not focused and, you know, do the podcast and not be really emotionally invested in it, it's like, all right, here's my timeline. I know I'm going to crush this event in person. I know they've got to go to the Olympia. That's going to chew up some time. I'm going to probably need a week, you know, to kind of decompress afterwards while I train clients. I got a little bit of social stuff this weekend. And then next week, it's going to be foot on the gas with writing stuff. I've already talked to my editor at Muscle and Fitness about some project ideas there. And I've also said no to other speaking engagements until a commitment I have in late February. So that's another thing as well, is you have to be able to turn around and get really clear on what's advancing your agenda and what isn't. A great book. I like to speak in book metaphors. So Essentialism by Greg McKeown, right? Awesome book. If you haven't read it, it's great for anybody because it gets you really good at two things. One is identifying what's really important, essential to you, and what's superfluous, what feels productive. And there's a lot of, here's a really important thing that's related to all this. A lot of people, and including myself, can fall into this trap. We get really caught up in consuming information. You reference how much information I consume. Okay, it's why I do things like audiobooks, because I can do it while I'm driving. I can do it while I'm cooking, when I can't otherwise study for another course. And that's a, you know, habit stacking, pretty classic idea. But that frees me up for the other time to do the most important things like building presentations, writing articles. Otherwise, if all I'm doing is just continuing to consume, it's an emotionally soothing way to procrastinate from doing the hard thing.
Yak shaving. That's what, yak shaving. Great term that we kind of talk about in, originated from a gentleman in MIT, but people are really good at distracting themselves with what seems like the main thing, when in reality, they're not addressing that. It's the idea of, I've got to go to the store and grab this. But oh, the minute you go out to your garage, you hear the door squeak. So now you're fixing the squeaking door. And then, oh, when you went to into the drawer to get what you needed for fixing the squeaky door, the drawer came unhinged. And now you're fixing the drawer. People just got to be able to stop and say, no, keep the main thing the main thing.
And there's another dimension to this, too, that I want people to recognize. With a course or a book or something of that nature that you can consume, it's an easy thing to follow along. There's usually a clear formula. But what you're avoiding may be starting to write, put together an article, put together a presentation, put together, start that YouTube channel or that podcast, or maybe it's building some aspect of a new business, that project, that side hustle you're working on, whatever it is, right? And those things don't have a clear outline or formula, which is why people avoid them. It's one of the reasons why they avoid them. It's the hard thing you know you're supposed to be doing. So therefore, what do? You go do the easy thing that you can follow along. Oh, here's a course outline. Read this chapter in this order. And you feel great about it because you don't feel like you're sitting down watching TV. And here's another curse and a danger. If someone gets so caught up in all this stuff that they feel guilty to be able to sit down and spend an hour watching a TV show they love or spending a bit of time with family, like you can't, that you always have to be hustling and grinding. And you're not efficient when you do that. Anybody listening, have you ever been in this situation where you're sitting down, you're supposed to be either with family, friends, or some leisure time, you're picking away at your phone, and none of it's recuperative. It's stressful. It doesn't leave you feeling any more relaxed. You feel guilty the whole time, or you were supposed to be working and you scrolled on your phone for an hour. You feel guilty about it. Now you're further behind. You feel worse. You're not recuperated. It's actually identifying those behaviors and trying to both relax the guilt and the shame of actually taking recuperative time so that we are more focused when you're actually working. Those are actually some of the key ways that you can actually get more of the work done.
Yeah, no, I agree. And by the way, just a couple things, side notes for those of you following along. He talks about some excellent points that are in episode 273, where we talk about the productivity myth. And then we also have some episodes as well, and we'll put these in the show notes, all about why do we have so much trouble relaxing and avoiding that kind of pitfall so that you can have sustainable success. Another mention, just so you don't feel overwhelmed here in a lot of the books, again, I told you he's a very prolific learner in the intro. If you go to artofcoaching.com/reading list, the majority of the books that Andrew is referencing is going to be there. Now, you mentioned writing. You mentioned putting together presentations. Let's pivot a little bit, because I'd love to hear your process for how you do that, especially in the context of so many of our listeners have a day job. They're incredibly busy. Many of them will feel guilt if they were to come home after a full day of work and start kind of pecking away at things because they're like, hey, I need to be around family. I need to do this. Some of them might even work weekends. So I just love to know at the most basic level, What is your writing process like, whether it's a simple blog post or anything more complex? Talk to me about how you write. Do you use pen and paper? Do you outline? Do you use certain, what do you do?
All right, so it all starts with idea generation. A lot of people struggle to come up with ideas. This is the most important part. And number one, I'm hoping that you're writing about something that you're interested in. Writing can also serve as a proxy for any type of content creation.
Sure.
So if you're writing about shit you're not interested in, it's going to be torturous.
Yep.
There's a problem. So if you're writing about things you're interested in, great. Now, again, I'm in fitness, but this works as a broader metaphor. When I'm working with my clients are my inspiration for ideas for short form social media or long form writing articles. The first thing I ever wrote for was a website called T Nation. It's big in the strength and conditioning world. And anything I've ever put up there is because of stuff I've done with real clients in real time or my own workouts. The idea comes to mind. Here's the key. Make sure you capture the ideas. If you're having a conversation with someone, let's say you work with clients, having a notebook or a laptop or a tablet. I hate cell phones for this because it doesn't look professional to anyone who's outside of it or even to your client. Just a funny little thing. And just make sure you say to them, listen, you just gave me a great idea. My clients love that. When they see a social media post or they've been referenced in an article, then they feel very proud. So there's 5 seconds that took me to go make a quick note because you'll forget. You think you're going to remember this stuff. It's like you pop up in the middle of the night and you think of something. Notebook next to your bed, I promise you, because you go back to sleep and you think you're going to remember that, it's gone, especially with all the stimulus we get and the distractions. Forget about it. So you have to capture it in real time. That's actually one of the most essential parts. And then if you get in the habit of doing this, I have my notes section on my phone obviously if I'm with a client, I'm not using, I use the tablet, but
yeah.
I have this section and I'll build upon things. I'll have just one note and I'll keep throwing ideas in if I'm making a presentation or whatever. And it starts to be scripted in my mind. So that's actually my way of getting a loose outline. Then I'll turn around in a dedicated piece of time where I'm sitting down and I'll actually framework either the article or the presentation out. And then once I've got the framework, I feel a lot better.
Real quick, just though, because we might have some people that don't even know. They're like, whoa. Like what is even the process of like a framework? How do I distill, right? Like, cause the curse of knowledge is so real. And they get this idea of a framework, right? We see it in books. We see people take a lot of what seems like complex ideas and boil it down to some kind of acronym or whatever. But talk to me, even just like for somebody that's like, man, how do I distill what I have into a framework? Getting to the real core of that. Because that takes practice.
It's point form. Like make a heading, make a few headings of what you want to talk about. Maybe you've got five major points that you want to talk about in an article. Let's keep it simple. You write those down. They have their own sections. And then you break out the sub points. What are the things you're trying to say? Whether you're formatting the way you write the words of a social media post or something bigger, the best question you can continue to ask yourself is, what am I really trying to say? Because a lot of people aren't good writers. Let's just acknowledge that. You can get better as a writer by practicing, but there's a handful of books. Message me on social media. I will literally give you personalized recommendations on writing books. No problem there. And if you get a little bit better at this stuff, it's going to make your life a whole lot easier. But most people struggle with writing. So you're going to probably have to get, I find this practice of what am I really trying to say? And if you can then finally like just spill it out about the message that is going to help the person who's going to consume this, then that often is the best way to express it. Once that's down on paper, then you can tidy it up, clean up some wording a little bit, clear out some clutter, make it mentally shorter. And then you continue to practice that over time. That's the great thing about short form written social media, which I built a social media following on. You get so much sheer practice. I wrote all these things on Twitter. It's the Twitter format graphic. Here's the genius, the old character limit, 140 characters. You have to edit it down so that way it's succinct but has impact. And it forces you to choose your words better. It's actually an incredible exercise in writing.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's a huge thing to acknowledge just right out of the bat, because so many of us have things that we want to express. And finding a medium in which to do that, really trying to think what is the best way that I can express these ideas. And sometimes it just really is slowing down and thinking, what do I want to say? And I ask people to really embrace constraints because they don't often know what they want to say. And so just saying, all right, you can give them a simple just index card and say you get 3 points to make your core message right there, or you have to treat that like a billboard. Or when you're trying to figure out what do I want to say, I always just say, I say, if they didn't have this realization, if they didn't have this information, what is the worst case scenario that would happen? Like what happens if this doesn't get out into the world? What could be the issue? So we just had somebody give a great presentation on self-determination theory, autonomy, mastery, competence, all this kind of stuff. And it was like, okay, this information is interesting. But if somebody doesn't realize this, what happens? Well, we could have real issues with motivation, all right? And what happens if that person doesn't feel motivated? Well, now all of a sudden they're not going to achieve something that could help other people. Okay, but then what? People have to excavate into 5, 7, 8 different whys of the ultimate in absentia of this idea, what would happen? And it's always going to be more simple. You know, and it takes a long time. It could be like for us when we're really trying to get people to understand the nuance of communication. Well, it's not so you can just be, and you know this better than most, it's not so you can just be this super eloquent person. That's not what it's about. It's because most of our issues in life are centered around communication, and you can alienate people and you can lose so much of the progress that you hope to reach as a professional or as a person, or you just miss an opportunity to make an impact, right? And I think that has always been interesting about your work is you get your ideas out there and you'll go and go and go, but at the end of the day, there's a central message here. There's a let's bring it all in. How long did it really take you to kind of find that? What kind of constructive criticism did you have to embrace? Do you think that you just, I mean, I imagine there were times where you have to look at this and just be like, man, my work is shit, and get better.
I'll try to tease out and answer that. There's something embedded within all this, right? And yes, if you're getting up and giving a presentation, you have one shot at it, right? You're M&M, one shot. Then the stakes are a little bit higher, but I tend to look at this a little bit more broadly. And again, this is something that Seth Godin does a really good job of within his book, The Practice. It's you work really hard to develop the skills, okay? You practice, you get better and better at it, but you also cannot really marry a really strong emotional reaction to the outcome of any specific thing, right? Mm. You release it, you do your best work, you ship the work, as Godin often puts it, and you move on to the next thing. And social media is fun like that because you get a lot more bullets in that chamber. You get to put more stuff out. Yes, you will learn from the reactions, but you don't take it overly personally. If you can divest the emotional attachment to, oh shit, that post didn't get any likes. All right, cool. Well, what's the information that? Something about it wasn't resonant. The way that you chose the words, maybe the topic didn't hit home with people. Okay, cool. It's on to the next one. Let's try again. And if you get enough practice and enough fire, enough bullets off, and if you're paying attention to the process, you generally get better and better. You get a feel for what people like, what resonates with them. And it's not about just feeding people superficial, you know, fluffy stuff that'll make them feel good for a moment. It's about figuring out, okay, what's actually going to really get people to pay attention to your message. And social media is a very superficial touch point. It is. And the people who criticize that are missing the point. What is it trying to do? It's trying to get people to your longer form resources, like your podcasts, which have this level of depth and nuance, or a piece of writing, a long form piece of writing, or a book, which really goes big in depth, or anything else. So I try not to actually get too emotionally hung up on any particular reaction to a post. I'll post it. I'll interact with everybody who's kind enough to comment or share or message me about it. And let's say it doesn't hit as broadly, but it's meaningful to a handful of people. And I say to myself, well, it was actually really important for those people. I feel good about the message. Maybe I can find a better way to have it impact more people. But I don't punish the people who are kind enough to respond to any piece of content, long form, short form, that didn't do well. No, I'm actually very grateful, and I'll engage with them. I'll send them voice messages on social media and answer their questions. And I'm very grateful for every one of those touch points, whether it the specific thing that I've created creates a lot of buzz and attention or very minimal. And I just move on to the next one. If I bomb something, which I mean, I'm sure there are articles that go back that aren't as great as other ones, but if I bomb something, okay, cool, not a big deal. I'm going to go do the next one and I'm going to go do the next one and I'm going to get better at it. And you probably will gain more skill by simply doing more practice and more work while strategically going to resources that are going to make you better. It's why I'm careful about books on writing. So if I'm choosing a couple of really good books on writing to make sure I'm doing the big things well, 90% of writing is getting a handful of key things right. Right. And there's a couple of good books. I'll shout one out, On Writing Well by William Zinsser. Right. And there's another newer version that's similar. Everybody Writes by Anne Handley. You read one of those books, it's going to make you a substantially better writer if you apply the lessons and you know the basics. Like a lot of the really fluffy creative stuff, like you think, oh, I need to be an English major. Actually, I'm going to be honest with you. If you're an English major and you write that way, it's actually going to make you worse, not better. You have to learn, because you're better off reading a book on copywriting if you're trying sales writing in order to actually be an effective communicator to the modern audience.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, just really to kind of consolidate a lot of this, some of the most important things if somebody's writing and creating a framework of any kind is, aside from defining the purpose, the so what, really got to know your audience and the vehicle. This is something that's part and parcel that I'm dealing with right now is there were some aspects of the book that I'm working on at the moment that I just had to continue to simplify because I got about 300 pages. That's all I'm able to be able to do with this publisher, because there's so many other things that have to go into that. And you just really have to think about how are they going to digest this? And I'm somebody that I can tend to abhor things like simple acronyms where a lot of frameworks can fit, or, you know, I even used one in conscious coaching, the 3R method and the 3R framework. But the reality is, from a cognitive ease standpoint, it's a lot of what your audience wants. So I think one big, huge piece there too, to complement things that you're saying, is know who your audience is and know who they're not. For me, in my next book, I'm not really trying to write for people that need some scientific dissertation on everything, because they by and large wouldn't understand the point of the book. The point of the book is to get to a larger audience and have people actually use this stuff, not just have this kind of, you know, I'm sorry for the terminology, but we've used it before. People really get caught up in mental masturbation and they think, wow, because I'm really passionate about this stuff and I love it, that I am entitled to learning everything there is to know about it in these 300 pages. Or if you're writing, you can feel the pressure to think that everybody needs to know everything you know. And that's not the case. You really have to decide what information is essential and then what might be supplementary. And that goes into having to kill your darlings. So I think if you know your audience, define the purpose, and then can prioritize what's essential for this topic right now, and then what is supplementary, that can really go a long way towards managing overwhelm. Any thoughts on those things, or anything even that you disagree with?
No, I don't know if I have anything to add, but you're absolutely right. The audience part, and this is something that I tell anyone who wants to start writing, especially if you're trying to get published on publications relevant to your industry. You have to know the voice and the style of the publication you're trying to write for. Here's a little side piece. I go all over the place with this. I think a thing that people get really caught up in when they're trying to get featured in something, they're chasing status. This is a very important lens to understand the world through. Humans are status recognition machines. We're pattern recognition machines. And one of the fundamental algorithms that humans live by ancestrally was status, right? It was the sort of thing that could get you kicked out of the tribe or get you more resources or more mates or what have you. It's a little different in modern terms, especially when it comes to things like social media. It can get very maladaptive. But what people ultimately are often doing is you sometimes have to check on your motives for why are you even doing some of this stuff? Are you doing it because you actually want to help people, or are you doing it because you're chasing status? And one of the ways you can tell that someone's chasing status is they go in wanting to tell their story. And so one of my editors, quote, Eb Samuel, he says, no one cares about your story, right? So if you're going into a situation like this, this will parallel what you're saying, this will get to the point, is how do you serve the person you're trying to help? how do you serve the audience of that publication? And how do you serve that editor so you make that editor's job easier when there's a lot of competition for getting within the pages of a magazine or on the featured on their website? And I think that's a really critical lens to look at it through. And it goes back to what you're saying. You ultimately do have to know who your audience is, who you're trying to serve. And if there's a misalignment there, maybe the misalignment's in your motives.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a great point. That's an excellent point. And I don't think there's, and I get what you mean, but I just want to orient this for the audience. I don't think there's always something wrong with telling your story. You're never really an expert until somebody invites you into their life as one. And sometimes people want that sharing. But to your point, right, if somebody goes on and on and on, it's to a degree even why we mix up how we start this podcast. We do the introduction on the front end, and then we just try to talk as people, right? And that's because sometimes, especially with this podcast, we always wanted to do something where instead of chasing celebrities, we met with people that are out there doing real things. People like you, people that don't always, we're not always going to be given a voice right on the Dax Shepard podcast or the Joe Rogan podcast. And with that though, you get people that aren't really media trained. So you get people that can get really excited when the microphone turns on and they'll tell their story, but then all of a sudden it's 15 minutes and you're like, hey, love you, love this, but we've got to get into the content, baby. We got an hour here. So I just think, it's people, of course, will care. They want to know your story. It's about even that though, you got to apply that framework, right? You've got to say, what is critical about this right now? What are the main things I can get across? Hey, I've done boom, 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 or I went through blank, 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 and then just leave it and say, now I want to make sure that I honor your time. If there's anything I didn't make clear or you want to talk more about, let's go. But that's the inciting incident that got me interested in this space. So I think I heard you correctly when you were saying that, is just don't ramble nonsensically about your story, but kind of make it cogent.
Maybe look at it this way. How can your story be valuable and interesting to someone else? You want to know this popped up in a book I read. The type of book that performs the least well out of all the book categories, they're books about people, right? We're not talking like biographies of like Abe Lincoln, that sort of stuff, but books written by people about themselves. I've got a client, he's a retired lawyer, and he wrote a book, and he's actually telling the story of a successful businessman. He's a Métis man up in Northern Canada. And my client, Neil, he chronicles the story, and he'd been his lawyer. So this gentleman, Gordon, was not really all that interested in writing his own book, but he was interested in having a story told. So Neil tells a story about someone else. And there's a whole bunch of things about this that should be interesting to the reader, as opposed to Neil telling his own story. He goes to his 50-year law class reunion, and there's a classmate of his who's got a book about himself. And there was clearly strong interest in that group about the book about the other individual, this Métis man, but the guy who wrote the book about himself, people weren't particularly interested in. And it's not to say that it's necessarily straight up narcissism, but we identify it through that lens and we see that. So when you're telling a story, just make sure that that story is meaningful, resonant to the other person. It's very valuable to them, as opposed to sounding narcissistic and self-aggrandizing. I think that's the key.
Yeah, no, and terrifically important too, just when you present. And because sometimes people can tend to use platforms as therapy. And we have compassion, we have empathy, we understand why people get excited about these things, but I've seen plenty of speakers where they're 20 minutes into their talk and they're still thanking their mentors and they're still doing this. You have a responsibility. And so it's just important to remember that whether you're writing, whether you're speaking, you're not just going to get one shot. You have a chance. And this isn't the time to let everybody know everything about you, everything about this, everything about that. It should be invitation. It should be like, hey, here are some thoughts on this. Here are some points on this, but then let it go. Is there anything else you want to talk on that before we kind of switch gears?
No, you did it well. Let's see what else you got.
Cool. Yeah. So when we look at this as well, I'd love to know what tools you use And this is, I mean, this is one of the most common questions whenever we talk about learning. People love, whether it's OneNote or Evernote or Google Docs or a leather-bound journal. I mean, it never seems like there's enough podcasts on this. And what really people, as you know, are looking for is, hey, is my way okay, right? And yeah, we kind of have this idea that there's this one-size-fits-all method. I'm not so worried about what you think is optimal, because as you know, it's different for everybody. But what do you as Andrew Coates use? No matter how messy it is, let us into your office, your desk, whatever that is, your phone, if you will, and tell us some more there.
I think there's this search. We could spend a lot of time. I think it's more productive procrastination to look for the optimality. We can look for the hacks. We can look for the program. I downloaded Evernote forever ago. I never use it. I use the notes file on my phone.
Yep.
The search function, it's like the people who spend a lot of time organizing their emails into files. Search function on email is so good that you just search for what you're looking for. Same thing with, I just use Pages. I'm an Apple guy. So I just use Pages, right? Microsoft Word effectively. And if I'm working on an article or what have you, a presentation, I have a document for it. That's it. And I don't use any sort of special filing or organizing system. But if I'm making notes, I will make sure, here's a thing. I make sure to make it searchable, I use keywords. So I make sure the keywords are sort of in the title of the note, presentation, blah, 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 what have you. So wait, if I have an idea, I'm driving and I think of something I want to include in a presentation, cool. I'm probably not going to dig for that note. I'm going to pop up a fresh one at a red light because I'm not texting while I'm driving, guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, presentation, boom, make the quick note, put the thing away so that way I don't lose that idea. Again, it goes back to idea generation, idea capture in real time. I don't have any fancy special systems. I love the idea of having the leather-bound journal. I got them. I buy them. Like with Sir Richard Branson. Apparently, he's really famous for those. Guess what? I don't tend to go look back at them, and I don't carry them around with me very often. So I find that the most effective thing is there's a basic, effectively a Word doc and my notes thing. And that's it. That is literally all of it.
Yep. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
It's just that simple. So I don't have all these complex apps that I use for this stuff.
So mainly whether it's an idea, an article, anything like that, it goes there first. You have kind of this stockpile, this shoebox, so to speak, of things that live in your notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What if you are in a situation, I know for me, if I'm walking or if I'm just kind of away from my phone or I don't want, I'll use the voice recorder app on my Apple Watch. I love the voice recorder, and I'll sometimes even email it to myself with a headline. You know, it kind of says, hey, related to book or related to podcast that we're going to do on blank. You ever use voice recorder?
So I've tried, and in a couple of situations where something like, again, driving, you know, I really wanted to grab, but then I don't go back and reference them. So it's entirely what you will use and what's practical. You just described something that works for you, which is not something that works for me. Mm. Doesn't matter how you capture it. The key is that you're capturing it. But notice we're still talking about simple things. Either we're talking about the three ways: audio, video, or writing. That's it. Everything boils down to those three things, right? Presentation, you know, informal content, long form content. A presentation can be, well, it's audio and visual, right? Yeah, sure. There are writing slides on it. It sort of has components of all three. Articles are writing. A book is writing. A podcast is audio. Maybe you double it to video on YouTube, like Rogan does. But everything is one of those three things. So you just find the means to capture your ideas on one end, the inputs, and then the way to express the ideas on the output. And that is sort of a choice about what's your medium that you're sharing on. You're writing a book, right? That's obviously the medium. This is a podcast. But we don't need to overcomplicate it. We don't need to use fancy tools. If you find a fancy tool that really works for you, great. But how many people are getting bogged down listening? If anybody who's struggling with this stuff, ask yourself, what's the bottleneck? Am I struggling with trying to find all the productivity tools? Okay, get rid of them. Stop reading productivity books. Start doing the thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues with that. A lot of people read the same books over and over and over again. And not that there's not value in that, but I think it's just, that can be a very... very intricate kind of self-soothing technique. If people really looked at their bookshelf, it's kind of like, all right, how many more things? I mean, I remember this even when I was in strength and conditioning, I'm just sitting there like, all right, I think you got enough books on periodization, right? On the other hand, there's almost nothing here on psychology and communication. And then I just realized, okay, well, maybe I need to be part of that solution. And that's a lot of what inspired me to write my book. And, but yeah, I mean, I think people just need to sometimes take inventory of these things and think, am I overcomplicating it here? Can it really be, you know, simple? And also just budget. I think now this is a contentious topic and it goes into the question I was going to ask you next about how you budget, but just coloring this real quick. I think another thing that gets people into these overwhelmed states is, and we had somebody reach out to, oh, you know, I want to do this, but you know, I rarely have the budget. And it was easy to kind of go into just financial advice around that. But what I said is, you know, you need to look at what the nature of the courses you're investing is. They were going to a lot of these things where it was 10, 20 speakers, 60 minutes at a time, but which those things can be valuable. They have a point, they have a purpose. And if you're speaking at them, right, they can be used for marketing or it's a good idea, way to get exposure to a lot of ideas. But there's also a truth that those are kind of junk food seminars. There's a limit to how much you're going to be able to extract. And I found this even back when I was going through a lot, I spent a significant amount on my Con Ed. And then I remember one time just spending more than I had ever really thought I was going to spend on something that was 3 days, massive deep dive, one primary topic. And I thought, man, this is nice. This is nice. I'm kind of tired of doing all these kind of things where it's just person after person after person. And it's not even a common theme. What I wonder for you is, once again, we all have finite resource, time, energy, and money. How much do you tend to allocate? And you don't need to give like an actual number. It might just be a percentage of what you bring in a year. How much you allocate to Con Ed, specifically in terms of traveling, going somewhere? And what's your way of thinking around that? Because there's a lot of people that think that's a cost as opposed to an investment. And I think they could use some tips there.
I think it fundamentally starts with changing the attitude about cost to investment. Mm. Right? That's one. I think those type of events, like I've really enjoyed, and those kind of events where you have a lot of different speakers is what changed my life. My first time I met you was at Luca Hosovar's 2017 Fitness and Business Summit, which, you know, that's where I got that book signed. And, you know, there's a ton of great stuff there. That blew the doors open on what I thought was possible with my career. And that's not unique to fitness. I think that can be true of any industry.
Absolutely.
But there's another lens to look at it through. These are also vacations for me. These are chances to get together with my friends in the industry, many of whom I spend more time with and I have more in common with than some of my friends here locally up in Northern Canada above the wall in Edmonton, Alberta. So, you know, again, I was just at the Olympia, so I got to walk around there. I saw one of my old friends from Newfoundland that we used to go to university together and lift at the gym together. He's actually a very well-known IFBB pro bodybuilder named Frank McGrath. We hadn't seen each other in over 17 years. It was really exciting to see him. So I drive a lot of fulfillment out of the interpersonal side. So that's the dimension I like to add to these things. And I come away from them fired up. Now, a lot of trainers come away from these things fired up only to not execute on anything.
Yeah.
But a lot of this also is what I started out earlier about. You actually expose yourself broadly and then figure out where you need to go deep. You realize that speaker that, oh, wow, Brett Bartholomew, he talks about, you know, communication. I realize that's a gap in what I'm doing. Let me go check out what, oh, I'm going to go listen to his podcast. I'm going to go do a deeper dive. Oh, he's got a course on this. Cool. This is what I need. And then you go and you search broadly until you find the things that you actually realize are the deficiencies. Admitting those is probably the hardest step. And then you actually dive deep. And that's how you allocate the stuff. I'm also a big believer in this. Develop the business skills, work on whatever skills you need to increase your income, your livelihood, be smart about your livelihood to the point where time becomes the issue, not money, right? And where you can, this is an old mantra, where you can spend money to save time, it's probably a pretty good investment. I struggle with aspects of it because I'm still a one-man show. I don't outsource much. I've hired people to set up my email marketing before, hired a guy to build my website for me, did a really good job, that sort of stuff. Because those would have been just time prohibitive for me to even figure them out. But yeah, you only have so many hours in the day, sure. And that at a certain point, you can't do everything.
No.
It becomes just going, all right, like, oh, I really like that person in the industry. They're doing great, but they do that thing. Now I need to do that thing. No, you haven't mastered the things you already are trying to do.
Yep.
You're spreading yourself too thin. If anything, I think a lot of people would be better served condensing their focus down to maybe one specific thing that they're trying to grow and build, whether it's a social media platform, a long form media thing, or whatever aspect of the business. Alex Hormozi talks about this. You get these people at four or five businesses hoping that one idea takes off. No, just put all the time and effort into that one thing and make it grow, literally force it to take off, right?
Yep. I think that's a great point. And constantly just engaging in this reflection of thinking, why am I going to this? What is it in the, is it constant intake because of insecurity? And I feel like I need to know it all. You just got to focus these things and you need to not run from the hard stuff. I think that was one of the most inspiring answers I gotten from an attendee. And Will Abbott, if you're listening, came to one of our workshops in Cardiff. And I said, what was it that brought you here? And he said, you know, I've done a lot of Con Ed and I was finally just ready to focus in on some of the hard stuff. I've ascended to leadership positions more and more. And almost everything that comes back to a core struggle point is something related to people and the management of it. And I sat there and I took a look at the Con Ed I was doing and it didn't align with that. And so I thought, all right, it's time to do that. And then you have to kind of go seek those things out. Now, just switching gears here for a minute, you mentioned, and I think it's really great that you mentioned this because there's a lot of pride around this and a lot of stigma and there shouldn't be. It's something that we've done a number of episodes on. You mentioned that, hey, you know, I had a period here where I burn out. I think it's really important for people to know and have an idea of what are the things that can start to whittle away. Like for me, for example, right? A little bit of self-disclosure. I can only be around people so much. I do the podcast. I speak quite a bit. I do a lot of coaching. And this isn't something that I've always had. I mean, my entire life, 15 years, was spent around people and music and this and this. But I can get kind of just almost like a nerve that's been touched too much. My nervous system, it gets so locked in when I'm teaching that afterwards I need to be just reclusive for a bit. So if I go from teaching and then family comes and visits and then there's this and there's that and there's too much interaction, there's too much social stuff, I'll start to get worn down a bit. I have to step back periodically. And it's why even though we have a business, I make it a point of saying, hey, there's a certain time of year I'm not going to speak that much. There's a certain time of year I'm not going to do this. I'm going to recuperate. So that's one example for me. What are some things both maybe common and uncommon for you that you've really been able to be like, yeah, this has a pretty big neural or emotional hit on me and I have to be very, very mindful of it?
There are dimensions of this I think that are important. Like there's the classic and almost cliche, someone who comes into the fitness industry, like many entrepreneurial efforts and thinks, oh, I get to do this 9 to 5. Oh, work-life balance. There's no such thing. Like you can discard that thought right out the window. Two, there are going to be seasons where you will have to work very, very hard to build and get ahead on things. There are going to be, again, these are really cliche answers. There are going to be people who will literally outwork you. I mentioned our friend Luca Hosovar. You just watch Luca and his work ethic. And sometimes I look at Luca and I'm like, oh man, like that makes me tired. And sometimes I'm like, I got a little bit more in the tank. So then I have to start listening to what's going on. And for me recently, it was a combination of things. I noticed that I'm 45, so I'm not a kid anymore. But, you know, I feel pretty good most of the time. But I was noticing that my sympathetic nervous system was just like more on all the time. I was consuming a bit more caffeine, which I think is part of the problem, right? I usually sleep pretty good, good sleep opportunity. But I was noticing that I'm accumulating injuries because my training is an outlet for me. And I wasn't even necessarily just like beating the living hell out of myself training, but I'm noticing that, wow, my shoulders are bugging me. It's not like, oh, I lifted something heavy and it hurt in the gym. I took a step 2 weeks ago and I pivoted and all of a sudden I felt my knee twinge. And it's not been okay ever since. I still haven't even had time to get in front of a physical therapist because of having to get ready for this event. And so I got to do that now this week. And I actually do think I may have a partially torn meniscus, lateral meniscus. And that's not good.
Yeah.
So we'll see. And I walked around for 2 days nonstop at the Olympia on this knee. I got a knee sleeve at one point. I bought one from a booth just to be able to continue. I'm actually okay. There's a time to push through it a bit, but then there's a time to go, okay, hey, the wear and tear is adding up. The physical wear and tear is adding up. The mental wear and tear is adding up. Notice if you're emotionally reactive to things in a way you aren't normally, or Now, God forbid, you know, you're a little bit more abrupt or a little bit less patient with other people. And if you notice that sort of thing, especially if it's slightly out of character, okay, those are little warning signs to say, okay, let me look at everything I'm doing. What's really important? What's essential here? Essentialism. What isn't right now? Where am I trying to do too many things? And that's one of the reasons why I said, all right, I got to go all in on my event. I got to go all in on this presentation at the Olympia. I will forever get to say I did an official Olympia event. It was a small side thing, but it was still
very cool. Yeah.
Very cool, right? Like, thanks, Michael Palmieri, you know, Olympia U, great guy, brought me involved in that. And so anyway, I will literally always be able to say that. And I didn't want to show up and just do a poor job. So I put the time and the effort in necessary. And that meant, and I never sacrificed workouts for anything, but I sacrificed some workouts. Again, give my body a chance to heal a bit. And, but I didn't think about writing. I didn't think about, I put some of the courses that I'd been working on because I was gifted a couple things, Renaissance Periodization's nutrition course, right? I beta tested it for the guys. They're friends of mine. I got to hang out with them at the Olympia. They're great people. And I'm supposed to finish this course. I'm supposed to be done by now, but I just put it aside. I'll have some more time after this when I, you know, when I'm a little bit more recharged, I'll do it. But I just made this decision to say, okay, I'm not going to try to juggle all these things. I'm going to take care of my clients. My clients are what let me do all of this other stuff. They're non-negotiable.
Yeah.
But where schedule drops down a little bit because it'll ebb and flow, I don't need to go gas pedal to the floor trying to acquire new people to fill every possible gap right now. I can take a little bit of a rest on that. I can always work on that later. January's coming soon enough. We're good. And these are the thought process. And I know that was a little bit meandering and nebulous, but that's what was going on in my brain for all that.
No, I think it's great. All right, let's do a couple just kind of quick fire questions, bring it back down to kind of just relax. You don't have to get technical with this. And then I want you to share absolutely everywhere our audience can support you, right? You gave a lot of really practical information, no nonsense information. That's what our people really like. And they know that they can learn from folks in all different realms. So we'll hit that. This, I'm going to take it back to an old school question that a listener said, hey, I used to love when you ask this, but you've gotten away from it. And they're right. I haven't asked this in a long time. Who, just because we believe that not a lot of things are really black and white in the world of leadership and life. So the off-color question today is, who do you think is one of the most misunderstood villains? Somebody, and it can be any genre, anything. This isn't even something we care if the listeners are aware, but who is a villain that you think is actually misunderstood? And it's like, no, we need to take a second. We need to take another look here. We had one person say Willy Wonka, by the way. And so you can go a lot of different directions with this.
Oh God. Cause I grew up on so many movies. I'm just trying to pull something out here.
Ugh. That's the point. Life is improv. No worries. Take a second.
Okay. I mean, it's almost a cheap one, but probably Thanos.
Okay. From the Avengers. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. The madman, right? And how he wants to bring the universe into balance. And I don't know. It's like his whole thing is to snap his fingers and wipe out half the universe. And yeah, like that's in theory, a malevolent and terrible thing. There's no avocation for that. I mean, if you look back at the history of the human species, we're a warlike, predatory, aggressive species that fights for status and land and resources and what have you. So there's sort of an argument, and that's literally his, that by culling the mass, like, you know, the numbers, that you can bring the universe into balance and sort of take away these arbitrary and brutal conflicts in just one theoretically painless snap. Now, do I agree with what he did? Of course not. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think if we can take a step back and go, it's like the Joker in Batman. That's another super cliche answer, right? The whole like thing, the anarchist version of him in Christopher Nolan's
Dark Knight. Yep.
One of the greatest portrayals of any character in cinematic history. But you look at him and it's like, is he a purely malevolent villain? Not necessarily. I think in both cases, they're idealists, perhaps ideologues. They have their set of principles, probably not the average, normal, everyday, benevolent human beings' principles, but they function on a series of principles. And I think that's the thing. If you look at some of these villains in some of these popular, you know, what have you. And if you can identify what are their principles that they're consistently operating within,
you can look at them through a different lens. There are, who's the one? I saw a meme recently. It's like the villain that didn't have, the person who is like really actually a villain who didn't have anywhere near the consequence they should. And it was the old man who was the creator of the original Jurassic Park. And if anybody remembers that, I saw it in theaters when I was a kid. It's an old movie. Brilliant for its time. Beautiful CGI. It's like, that's the guy who actually caused all the shit when you think about it, right? Yeah. It's not Newman from Seinfeld as much as the guy whose like idea it was to resurrect dinosaurs.
Yeah, that's a good answer. All right, next one. And 2 minutes or less for this one, the answer. If there is something, if you could give somebody a cheat sheet to know how to best communicate with you, Andrew Coates, right? And communicate with the goal of, hey, really connecting with you, making you feel valued, understood, all those things, aside from, of course, listening, right? Like we all know we want to be listened to. What is something they need to know about how they should communicate, whether it's your communication style, anything like that? What is something that people should know about you if they want to have a great interaction with you and build trust?
I think there's a couple of dimensions. One, I'm going to answer this sideways, and I apologize. I'm going to do this differently, because what I notice is when people are trying to interact with you on social media, they're often out for their own agenda. So oftentimes people will come in and they will feign interest in you only to turn around and try to promote them or sell them, sure, which I find very off-putting, right? I can't stand that. I would rather see someone who gets my attention because of acts of service to the greater industry and is just generally doing things. Most of the people that I've had meaningful relationships with are people who, like, I've just seen doing good work in the industry. You're a great example of that. Sure. I knew who you were. You were in this lineup of this event in 2017. I'm like, hey, I like Brett's stuff. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing him speak. Adam Bordenstein was there. Pete Dupuis, Mark Fisher, Luca, you know, the list went on in that one. And these are all people that I've gone on to have actually pretty good relationships with, but in large part because I was motivated to get to know them because I thought they were doing great things within the industry and being of service to a lot more people. I think if you can approach the world through one lens, be of service, okay? And people will find their way to you.
It's great. Now I'm going to hold you to answering it directly with verbal communication. Somebody sees you in public. They say, I heard this, right? And 1 minute or less, what's the best way and the most authentic way to build trust or just connect? What kind of communication style should they use? What?
Come say hi. Literally come say hi, right? Graciousness, but come say hi. The weirdest thing for me is people are funny with social media. Again, they attribute status to it, larger numbers. And sometimes people act like nobody in the fitness industry is a celebrity. No one is too famous. No one's walking down the street being interrupted. So guess what? Come say hi, be a normal human being. Be gracious. I'm very easygoing that way.
You bury the lead. You're Canadian too. So just, you know, be a thoughtful, nice person that says hi, looks him in the eyes, and actually take interest in what Andrew has to say. Yes?
Yes.
There absolutely. You go. Simple, right? Simple and easy. All right. Now, you've given a lot of great insight. You've been super transparent. You've come on with no preparation, anything like that. We, you know, this is a podcast with real conversations and not everybody, you know, navigates it super well because we just try to be real people here. Where can we support you? What's the number one place we can go? Hit us.
All roads go through Instagram. So if you send me a message, I will respond to every message. I will probably respond in voice. I prefer text one way. I send voice the other. Okay. My voice has been rough just because of this weekend. So you may hear a different voice than you've heard on air here. Just if you have questions about any of the books I've mentioned or any of the topics we talked about, send me a message. I will respond to it. I check everything, all the hidden DMs. If you really want to get into more of my resources, I share everything on Instagram. You'll find it there. But in my website, www.andrewcoatesfitness.com, you can find links to everything I've ever had published anywhere, my podcast, all that sort of stuff. But just shoot me a message. If you want something specific, I will literally handpick a book, a resource, something for you based on what you need.
Perfect. Well, Andrew, thank you again for being such a good sport, being so transparent. Folks, remember, always support our sponsors and our guests. They allow us to do this. We try to bring a lot of unique topics to you, things that you can use every single day, no matter what field you're in, what walk of life, what age, any of that stuff. So thank you once again. And thank you to all of you that have been listening. Andrew, we'll talk to you soon, buddy.
I got one more thing.
Okay, go ahead.
One more thing. All right, everybody listening,
how many times have you listened to this, you know, Brett's podcast, and how many of you have not actually gone and given him a 5-star review? Now, again, if you're driving, you do that. Don't do it while you're driving. But actually make a note of it. Do it at the first opportunity. It takes no time at all. Do that little free kindness to show the support, because that actually makes a big difference. If you're a passionate listener here and this is giving you a lot of value, I promise you that is the least you can do to give back.
I appreciate that very much. I appreciate that. Thank you very much, and consummate giver. All right, Andrew, we will talk to you soon, and everybody else, we'll see you next week.